I've tried to make sense of how someone who didn't stalk his victims in advance ended up going after the best and the brightest. And I think that's it. The thing they all had in common, a light that outshone his. He targets college campuses and sorority houses because he's looking for the cream of the crop. He wants to extinguish us. We are the ones who remind him that he's not that smart, not that good looking, and there's nothing particularly special about him.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club and our fourth episode of Spooky Season. We're bringing you all the latest on social media's most popular books. And for the month of October, we're doing that in a spooky theme. So I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And for, is this week four or week three? Week four? Week four. Of spooky season. Wow, the time has gone by. We are bringing you a brand new book that came out in September called Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll. And it discusses a fictionalized version of the Ted Bundy case, but it's from the perspective of the sorority president of Florida State University, of the sorority house that he murdered two of its members and injured two others. So it's all fictionalized, but it is based on a real story and true events. And the facts of the case are the same, but the mindset and the person who is the narrator is not the same. It is basically about Pamela Shoemaker, who is the president of the sorority house, and her reaction to her best friend, one of her sorority sisters, and two others being injured by Ted Bundy, or as the book refers to him, the defendant, and how she and her sorority sisters cope with the tragedy. But she also meets a fellow person who knew a victim of the same guy. And so they're trying to catch Ted Bundy in his crimes to finally convict him, because they have this common connection and they're really trying very hard to get this guy in prison or on the death penalty. So it's a very interesting and not very well told retelling of the Ted Bundy story.
Good summary. Did you guys find your reviews?
I'm going to read you a 3-star review. And I'm going to cut out like the first little paragraph because it wasn't that relevant. But this, it says, I quickly realized it was almost a retelling of Ted Bundy killings. I'm unsure how much of this was real versus fictional, so it makes me a bit uncomfortable how much Knoll used of the victim's stories to write this. If this was meant to be a biopic, write that. The story was enthralling, and I appreciated the emphasis about the women being the bright ones rather than how the media focused so much on Bundy's looks and smarts. I just didn't know enough about the real case and made it hard to separate fact from fiction, and I wish she could have separated them a bit more or used a different college or something than where he killed them. It feels a little icky to the family to dramatize this, even if the overarching theme is positive.
I guess I could see that.
Nice. I respect it. Mine is really short, so I can read mine next. It is a 3-star, and it just says, I wanted to love it, and instead, I just kind of liked it.
Fair enough.
I found it really hard to find good reviews of this book.
This I found a good review.
I had a hard time finding bad reviews.
Not
on
positive. I mean, like, good to read.
Oh, yes.
They're all paragraphs long.
Yes, they were
this
all like
the
paragraphs.
The longest I've ever looked for a review.
Theses. Yeah. And I found a 2-paragraph review that I'm going to read because it was kind of well encompassing of my opinions. It's a 5-star review on Goodreads. There's this thing about serial killers and brutal crimes. The public tends to gravitate towards the killers, who almost always become famous, but only families and friends keep remembering the victims, their names, their normal lives, their aspirations and dreams for the future, what they were doing and where they were before they got killed. All little details in the killer's great scheme of action. We don't get fascinated by them. We don't know we don't want to know about more about them. They're not individuals, but numbers. We study the killer and everything that concerns his life. And don't get me wrong, it's extremely important to do so. But how about them? All these movies, all these books, they're not about them, about what they've been through in their last hour of life, about what they could have become. The story about this man, but not in Jessica Knowles' version. So I think that encompasses what I think of the book. But what did you guys think? What was your reviews?
Wait, don't we have to read the Goodreads and the Amazon?
Oh, you're so right.
Okay. So the Goodreads rating is 4.16 out of 5, and the Amazon rating is 4.4 out of 5. So now I want to say I have seen both of y'all's reviews on Goodreads, so I want to go last. Y'all go first.
I've also seen Caitlin's, but I haven't seen Casey's. I gave it 5 stars because I thought it was an extremely unique version of true crime. And I went in knowing that it was a fictionalized version of events. But I was extremely, extremely mad at the Zac Efron retelling of the Ted Bundy case, because I felt like it made him out to be like this like sexy killer. And like, I know in some versions of events, there was some groupies and fans of Ted Bundy because of how the media portrayed him. But I felt like we didn't need that retelling with Zac Efron as Ted Bundy. Like, I felt like we could have just completely forgot about that and or never had done that and been fine as a society. So I really liked that this finally focused on the victims, because none of the media's retellings of anything like documentaries, books, movies have ever been about the victims. So I liked the idea, even if it was fictionalized, of this.
I also liked the idea and I liked the writing. I think she's a great writer. This book, however, left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth at the end. Similar to the review I read, I just couldn't figure out while I was reading what were real names, what were fake names, what parts were true, what parts were not. And I ultimately didn't like the hodgepodge of true and false information. I think you gotta go all one way or all the other. I think it kind of, to be blunt, shits on the victims' families a little bit by fantasizing what their families were going through. Despite one of the victims who survived being consulted for the book. And I thought the end was a little chaotic and didn't give me the resolution that I thought was coming. Like, it just started jumping back and forth too much. I did not like the time jumps. Overall, I gave it a 3 because I did like the writing and I liked the concept and I liked like the first half of the book. I think if you're going to use any bits of real information, because some of the victims that weren't main characters were real names, like, you've got to have an author's note or something making it very clear what is true and what is false. And I didn't like that. And I'm ultimately not sure with how she approached it if it's that different from the movies and documentaries, because then I had to dig in and do research on his victims and stuff to see what was true and false.
So I agree. I saw y'all's ratings on Goodreads and I was like, oh shit, it's gonna be a tense one. And this is the first time Catherine is gonna be not the like tiebreaker vote, but instead the one who has to stand on her own, I think. So I am ping-ponging between a 2 and a 3 for this book. I want to say there are things I really liked and appreciated about this book. The focus on the victims, I think, should be the standard for how we talk about crime. However, I felt like at a certain point, the book was really just a like vessel for the author to preach and not a vessel to tell a story. I felt like the time jumps were super confusing, the time jumps and the character jumps. I felt like some of the characters were actually really unnecessary to the story. And so like, while I agreed with the mission of the book, I did not really enjoy the story of the book and I did not like a lot of the characters. And I ultimately felt like a lot of them were actually really simple characters when they were trying to be complex characters. Like the villains were all like, and now we live in regret forever. And like, we're disgusting. And then all the heroes were like, and our deaths are tragic. And like, we're perfect. And I just didn't think it really like nailed what I think it was going for, which was like, hopefully like complex characters and complex situations that make sometimes bad choices. I felt like it ended up being like just kind of like preachy and confusing. And so I think I'm going to end up somewhere between a 2 and a 3, because, you know, I didn't end up like really enjoying it despite like being really passionate about the mission I think the author set out with.
I will say I feel shitty because I started reading this before they did, and I was, I don't know, 60 pages in, and was like, guys, this is really good. I can't wait for you guys to pick it up. Because I thought the beginning was really good. Like, yeah. So I feel bad, like, really taking a crap on it in the end, but, like, mm-hmm. It was fine.
No, totally fair. Yeah. No, I'm not surprised, because I definitely feel y'all's concerns, like when y'all are talking about it, because like it's with every true crime, honestly, anything that retells a true story, there is this fear of, I don't even know, like not giving true closure to the families and not giving mm-hmm. true like stories to the victims. I guess when I was reading it, because of how it was written, I think she's a really great writer, Jessica Knoll.
Yeah,
I was able to separate Ted Bundy from this book. I don't know how I managed to do that talking with you guys, but because he was never really mentioned, like he was just mentioned as the defendant, I felt like this was a fictionalized telling of events. Like I never felt the need to go look up stuff. I was just like, okay, this is a fictionalized telling.
That's my point, is if it's fictionalized, why did you throw in a few real names? Why did you use the actual sorority house where it happened?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know. I feel like you gotta go all one or all the other.
Fair enough.
It was well researched, but to the point, I think it was so well researched, she couldn't not include actual fact because she knew too much.
Right. One of my comments sort of about the story is like, I felt sometimes the story went on tangents and the book went on tangents because the author was like really focused on like the research she had done and displaying it. And so I think that was part of what made the story feel so disjointed to me, is like, I feel like this author should just write a nonfiction version of this. Like it's clear she did a ton of research, and I think her point is so valid. Like, I have thought Ted Bundy is stupid this whole time. Like, I remember the first time I ever heard about him, I was looking up his Wikipedia page. Like, I'm sorry, why is this man looking like everyone is talking about him like he's a genius? What, this man is clearly an idiot, and everyone talks about him like he's a genius. And I know y'all are going to agree with me hard on this point. There is a lot of research now. Like, as all of us are journalists and media professionals, there's a lot of research that focusing on the perpetrator of crimes creates more copycats, more crimes, whereas yes. focusing on the victims, you know, relays the story that's actually important about what has happened to a community, what has happened to people. And so I like very passionately agree that Ted Bundy has been way overblown, way overhyped in a sexist way that has absolutely created more disgusting culture around serial killings. But I just did not fall in love with the story.
Well, I think she makes the point at the end when... Okay, never mind. It's the end, so... Anyway, there's a scene that references current era people watching the Zac Efron documentary and, like, the other documentary. And they're like, ew, he's so dumb. It's like, yeah, that's the day and age we're in. We don't glorify Ted Bundy anymore. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish that was the case, but I know people okay, that still most glorify.
We have swung the other direction, at least.
Somewhat.
But
I will back Catherine on this point. I know a lot of people who ate up that Zac Efron documentary, and I was like, This is gross.
I adore Zac Efron, and I think I started it and quit it because I was like, this is too gross. And I like love Zac Efron. Like,
but
hit
like,
me up, buddy.
Like Casey said, like, I know people who ate up this documentary, and because of who was the lead star, they forgot that this was a true case. Like, honest to God, forgot this was a true case. And they were like, oh my God, he's so hot. Ted Bundy must have been hot. Like, why would they like make Zac Efron the lead character? Like, it was pretty horrendous, like some of the responses to it.
I've honestly recently, I guess in the last like probably like 2 years, stopped watching those kinds of true crime documentaries just because after working in news and knowing more about the details behind like a murder case and what the victims' families go through and all that garbage, like I just cannot stand to see anything that focuses on the criminal anymore. And I like the movement towards focusing on the victims, which is why I like the premise of the book. I really do. Mm-hmm. I needed it to be all fact or all fiction. Instead, I had to spend a while researching after to make sure I got so confused, even though I have a decent like knowledge of the Bundy case. He just had so many victims. And then I was like, okay, who is this supposed to be? And it's not supposed to be anyone, but they do match up with actual victims and just like totally fictionalize that victim's experience.
Okay. Well, let's get into discussion questions before we spoil the book, because there are some twists in the book that are unexpected or expected, whether or not you are.
Little did you know, this is actually an LGBTQ romance.
Also, just like, it doesn't necessarily, the crimes don't necessarily focus on Ted Bundy necessarily. So there's a lot of nuance to the book. So let's start with the non-spoilery section. Do you think this book is more plot or character driven?
I think it tries to be character driven, but is ultimately plot driven.
I agree.
I also agree with that.
It should be from the way it's written. I just don't think ultimately that part pulled through.
I agree.
Yeah, it's definitely more plot driven. So she does have, Jessica Knoll also has a best-selling book, Luckiest Girl Alive. Have you read that one or any other Jessica Knoll books?
So I have not read it, and I have not watched the movie, because Luckiest Girl is now a movie, starring Mila Kunis. I have not watched it, but I have heard that it is also a really brutal story. So I think
based in the author's own experience, also fun fact, with sexual assault.
That's what I heard. There was like, it was honestly like a really harrowing sexual assault in that movie. So trigger warning, but I guess that's part of what must inspire this author is like seeing victims be overlooked and killers and, you know, perpetrators, you know, made the stars.
I have not read the other one. I saw several reviews, though, when I was reading them saying I came in looking for her other book, kind of like the same thing, and just like wasn't as satisfied. So that was what I gleaned. Granted, that's a handful of reviews from people who have read both.
I saw conflicting stuff. I saw that. And then I also saw people who were like, I read her other book and I liked it enough, but I like this one way better. It seems like she's kind of like a polarizing author. I saw a lot of reviews that were like, I loved this book by her and I hated this book by her. And then I read this one. So
to be fair, she's writing about very deep and serious topics. So it's kind of natural to be polarizing.
I think that's true.
But how was the pacing of Bright Young Women? How long did it take y'all to read?
I did not love the pacing. I felt like, to Caitlin's point about the book attempting to be character driven, but like ending up being plot driven, there were lots of points in the book where I wasn't totally sure what we were pushing towards. There's like two different time periods and then two different characters who the three
Who?
Pam.
Well, there's two points of views.
Yeah.
Two, three Pamela time periods, one Ruth time period.
Okay. Thank you.
Two technical points of view.
And I honestly got lost in this book, and I didn't think it was difficult to read. Like, I kept reading it without like much resistance, but there were lots of times when I was just kind of like, I don't really fully get what the point is in these scenes.
I agree. Like I mentioned earlier, 60 pages in, I was like, guys, this is awesome. Like, the writing's so good. It's so interesting. And I think that's true. It's the scenes where there's more action, where, you know, the defendant is in the sorority house wreaking havoc, and the aftershocks of that, I found very interesting and very nuanced. And then it just kind of slowed and chugged through the rest. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to stop reading. Like, she's a good writer, and it never hindered me. It just like went from like a really, really great clip of pace to kind of just like back and forth plotting between the timelines. And I did find some of the point of view more so like shifting time and point of view at the same time. Those ones made me go, wait, wait, wait. I had to like recenter myself just a little bit. Not terrible pacing. I wish it had kept with the pace of the beginning.
And here I do want to give the author credit, because I feel like what she's doing is sort of experimental in the fact that like the climax event happens at the very start. And then what we're really reading is like exposition. Like, how are people reaching finality? How are people reaching resolution? And I really appreciate that. I just think she didn't totally accomplish the feeling of like forward motion.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. Like, totally valid about the climax being at the beginning. And then it's just kind of like the fallout from that climax throughout the rest of the book. Mm-hmm. For sure. That's kind of what's happening. I thought the pacing was slow. I will say that. I know I gave it 5 stars, but I gave it 5 stars because of the topic, less so the pacing. It took me probably like a week to read, which is unusual for me, I know. I'm normally the crazy one. Reads it in a day. But I loved I guess I'm so starved for victim stories that I just love the idea, even if it's fictionalized, of focusing on the victim stories, because I feel like we don't see that ever in true crime. And to be fair, I'm a victim of that because I totally listen to true crime. I'm very interested in it since, I would say, before the Zac Efron, but pretty close to it, I have stopped kind of consuming that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I felt icky about it once I started listening to victim impact statements and victim stories of like, no, this stuff is,
you know what it is, know my name. Yeah. That's what did it to me.
Yeah,
for sure. And it's just like, knowing what these kind of retellings do and re-traumatize a family and re-traumatize a victim is super, like, really not good. And so I've kind mm-hmm. of stopped listening to those retellings. So I liked the idea of a fictionalized version of this where it's like, okay, let's retell the victim's point of view or the victim's friend's point of view. I guess where I differ from Caitlin and Casey is just, I always thought of it as a fictionalized version, which I totally agree with Caitlin's statement. If you're going to use real names, and I haven't researched it after the fact because I just assumed it was all fictionalized, just it was the defendant equals Ted Bundy and that was it. But if it's real names of victims, I totally agree that you need to be real and true to their stories. And I did not realize that.
And I feel like most people won't. And that's part of my issue, too.
That's totally
like,
fair.
Need an author's note. Like,
You educated me on that.
I just went and looked at my Goodreads. This took me 9 days to read, and I read two books in the middle of it. Oops. Some short fantasy books, but that, if that tells you where the pacing slowed for me, I needed to pick up something a little bit magical and smutty.
Yeah, this book is not magical or smutty.
It's hard.
And again, I don't want to rag on this author too hard or this book too hard, because there were moments that I felt were incredibly impactful in the book. And there was writing that I thought was incredibly well done, and moments of trauma that were told, like, in ways that I think were incredibly respectful and useful and correct. It's just that, like, as a story, I felt like, you know, for me, it did not totally accomplish what I think it wanted to. But would you watch a movie or TV show about this book? Especially considering how much has been broadcast about Ted fucking Bundy.
Like, yeah, we asked this question to everyone, and I feel like this question is not appropriate almost for this kind of discussion, because in my opinion, no. I think it's perfect the way it is, in the sense of, like, keep it as a book. We don't need to make a fictionalized version of Ted Bundy, because then you have to see him on the screen. Like, right now, you're just imagining him as the defendant. But once you put him on the screen, you invite that kind of media attention to it. And we don't need that ever again.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't want to watch it. Sorry. I liked the concept. I just think Hollywood will ruin it.
Yeah. I think Jessica Knoll would agree with us on this one. At least I hope she would.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to my favorite part of every episode. What is your busy girl rating?
I want to hear Miss Five Star.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to surprise y'all. I'm going to give it a 3 on Busy Girls, because it's not an easy fucking book to read, especially if you're a busy woman. It is a lot of hard and deep subjects. And it is, not only does it deal with a serial killer that is specifically targeting young women, but also it deals with sexism, internalized sexism. It deals with microaggressions, how women walk about this world. And it definitely is hard to read as a woman who still walks about this world and see that not a lot has changed when it comes to a lot of the things that this book talks about. And I think that's kind of the point, but that can be extremely hard to read as a busy young professional, because you're just kind of like, fuck, I just want to escape into a smutty fantasy book. But sometimes these kind of things are good to read about every once in a while, so you don't feel so alone in your experience. So I'm going to give it a 3.
I think I agree with you on the 3. Matches my quality rating. I like the concept. I like the writing. I don't love the pacing, but also don't hate it. And I feel like a lot of people in our, you know, a lot of our listeners, our audience, would be interested in this kind of book. I just don't think it's necessarily super busy schedule friendly, and it's a lot of hard topics to digest. So I agree with you on 3.
Wow, we are all united. I was going to give it a 3. I think if we're describing it to you and it sounds like something that's in your wheelhouse, you will enjoy it. But it's tough stuff, and it's not a quick read. But, you know, I do think, especially if you're really into true crime, there is something you can really learn and take away from this book. So, I think you should still consider it.
Well, are we ready to do spoiler alerts?
Woohoo! Maybe I shouldn't cheer as we're about to get to the story of Ted Bundy murdering people. Sorry.
It's not Ted Bundy. It's fictionalized.
Sorry, the defendant.
The defendant, as he should be. Let's stop saying his name. The defendant.
But that really gets into our first question, actually, because that was kind of my first question for you all, because that was the first thing that came to mind after I finished the book. So it's the fictionalized narrative of the real life serial killer, who we've said his name multiple times now, so I won't say it again. in the 1970s. What do you think of this new perspective of a serial killer that has gotten so many adaptations of the story? How about the author calling him the defendant instead of his name throughout the whole book? Like, never his name is mentioned.
I saw a review that someone said his first name was in there at some point.
I don't remember that.
I didn't think it was, but
I did not read that. Yeah.
No.
I thought it was genius. It's not even on the book jacket. It's not in the reviews, like nothing on the book. The name that I found was nowhere.
Yep.
That's impressive. Why I think this book should be the standard for writing. Even though I didn't love the book, I think it should be the standard for writing about crime and criminals, because it should not have been about him. It should never have been about him. And I loved that when they reference him, they don't reference his name. Because, like, one of my favorite parts of the book was they were kind of like humbling the memory of him. And I just think, like, part of the reason these crimes are committed is because people think they're going to get famous off of it. But who are we glorifying? We're glorifying someone who is disgusting. We're glorifying someone who is gross, who does bad things to real human beings. And so I agree with Caitlin. I think it was genius to not ever mention his name. I don't ever want to see his name again.
Yeah. No, that was a beautiful part of the book where it's just the defendant. And even Pamela says, like, I will forever mention him as the defendant because his name has been brought up in every trash magazine and trash publication that has written about him and how he was alluring and sexy and so, so smart. And she was like, I'm a law student and I'm way smarter than him. He failed out of the lowest of low law schools in the country. And he doesn't deserve my attention and my naming him. And I think that should be the standard. I don't think, because we, even as journalists, I think about, like, we always named the guy that was arrested of, like, it's this guy who is this age. And we don't name the victims and we don't ever go to their stories because it's like, oh, that's sensitive. Oh, like, that's not given out by the police. It's like, well, we could have taken the time to do that. Why did we focus the story on the guy that was convicted or the guy that was charged? So it definitely was eye-opening for me in that sense, even though I was probably more open to it than most people.
What I also liked, how by calling him the defendant, it put a focus on the legal process and how he only became famous because the cops screwed this up in several different states. And I like the focus on that and how the only reason he is where he is because so many people underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, a rat can get out of a cage.
Yeah. And that's so funny because that's also one of my questions. So another major part of the story deals with the complete incompetence, although that's a soft word for the police at this point in this one. Mm-hmm. That turns out to not only be deadly by not the Colorado police, but the system as a whole. So what did you think about this and the telling of it in this story? Because I knew he escaped prison multiple times and I knew he jumped out of a two-story window because, yes, I did watch the Zac Efron version. I shut it off with after 30 minutes, but I knew about it. What did y'all think of how the system was portrayed? And do you think that translates into any of today's systems?
I was going to say, I will also mention time period.
Yeah.
Profiling serial killers. This is when it all started. It's not the same as it is today. So I understand. I feel like in that era, some people still thought no human could do that many bad things. But I liked how it described every step, every misstep that allowed for him to continue to be the evil person he was.
I think that this is an excellent book to talk about privilege. Like, in this same era, Black people are being stopped on the street and thrown in jail for, like, blinking wrong. And Ted Bundy can rape and murder dozens of women and people cannot, like, take him seriously. Like, the way he was perceived by lawyers, perceived by police is so important. and the way he was perceived by journalists. I mean, the media has a huge role in his ongoing legacy. And it's like, can you even like imagine in your mind in 1970 a Black man being described the way way the defendant was described? I mean, it is like shocking how disparate the treatment was.
Well, and one of the most powerful lines, I think, is when she's describing the state of serial killers in the 70s is this was just becoming a thing, Golden State, etc. She said, but others were around, you know, like women did it differently. Mm-hmm. They don't get caught. Black people, no one cared that Black victims died. So Black serial killers didn't get caught. It's because this was a white, semi-educated, normal looking person that got so much attention. And like, because he was killing beautiful women.
Yeah, no, it was beautiful, semi-well-educated women. Mostly well-educated women.
Well, and like 12-year-olds.
Yes, and 12-year-olds. It definitely rung true almost, where there was moments where I'm like, yeah, the profiling and the eyewitness testimony and the idea of police and how they treat different people and different genders and different races, like Casey said, like the author even mentions it, like Caitlin said. And so it's very interesting what the author is bringing up here of like, yeah, Ted Bundy was, or the defendant got caught, but there was plenty of other people that didn't get caught because the police didn't seem to give a shit about them.
Oh, and it's awesome. She points out too that it's the same today. Serial killers go after sex workers, people no one are looking for. So it's still the same. Women who are discredited because of what life has pushed them into. And so nobody knows they're missing.
Right. I loved that, like, sort of throw to today where, like, the box of who is most vulnerable has been changing, but, like, serial killers still operate in that box. And that's, like, heartbreaking. But I think it's even, like, in the 1970s, the author displays really well how even really educated white women were not taken seriously. And that is part of it, too, is, like, I mean, he was accused of, like, brutally, like, savagely raping and murdering several people at the time that he was in Colorado. And still the police could not give less of a shit about actually watching him. And so it's like the level that people were willing to go to invalidate even those who were seen as most, quote unquote, credible was like really shocking.
Well, and even the people who were kind of portrayed as allies at the end, like her boyfriend is like, well, yeah, but Columbia knows who your dad is. And she's like, what the hell? No, they don't. Like, I got into law school all on my own, you asshole. Like, I mean, like, so it kind of points out that, like, inherently that was the mindset of men at this time period, a lot of men at this time period. Mm-hmm. Like, it's implicit bias. You don't realize you're doing it, you know, but at the time period it was discrediting women because they were still kind of working their way out of being the household.
I mean, this was even Ruth mentions this was just during the women's liberation movement. Yeah. She mentions the women's liberation movement during her like point of views and like how people were trying to shut them down. And so it is literally in the height of women getting credit cards for the first
time. Women getting electroshock therapy for being angry at their families for not helping around the house.
Yes. And any female emotion being treated as psychosis.
It's like, someone call Bonnie Garmus. Let's get her in there.
Yeah. No, it is. The author did a good job of researching the time period and how women were being treated during the time period.
She did a good job of making you angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was angry. And I'm still angry.
Yeah. And like, I talked to my mom after this book because she was in college in the late 70s. So literally during this time period, she was in college. She was near where Jeffrey Dahmer was. So this was a whole time period where you had to worry about where you were walking around at night, where you carried knives and you walked around in groups and was part of the liberation movement. So this rang very true for her, which is really a credit to the author.
It is. Also, I know this is like a really random segue, but you know, we've already been talking a lot about how like the media is a part of this. And can I just say, like, fuck Carl, like the most aggravating villain of this book. I was like fucking dying.
I was shocked. I was like, what the fuck?
I think dementia, I don't wish that on anybody.
I wish that on Carl.
A terrible way to go out. Mm-hmm. But the fact that that's where the character ended up, I was like, well, karma's a bitch.
Wish that on Carl, 100,000%. Fuck you, Carl.
But like, we all worked in media. We all know a reporter who's willing to do what they gotta do to get the story on the front page. They exist.
Yes, it is sad but true, and a small minority. I would at least
small minority. There are also a lot more checks and balances in place, but like, it still happens.
It does. People want the headline that is the sexiest, and sometimes they abandon who is the most impacted, who is the victim, who is the oppressed. And it made me so fucking mad in this book.
And I feel like a lot of journalism schools do a disservice when they don't talk about trauma reporting and they don't really teach their reporters how to talk to victims of trauma as human beings, not just sources, because mm-hmm. these people don't deserve that. They have been through hell and back, and you just parachuting into their lives and then parachuting out is not okay. So,
there are managers that will say, no, you get the quote, like, mm-hmm. knock on that door of every family member you know. And like, that's part of what I hated working in news, is when I was supposed to send a reporter to go do something, if it crossed someone's boundary where they said, please don't talk to us, we need our space, I never wanted to send anyone to do it. Granted, we very, very, very rarely did that at our station, so I appreciate that. But like, I wasn't about to send someone to like remind people of their worst day, like, just because we needed a quote. That's terrible.
Yeah. And in this story particularly, he holds back truth about the defendant, which is totally inexcusable.
Could have convicted him for more things and given closure. Like, what the heck?
Yes. He kept secret the fact that there was a confession. I was like, oh my God, rot. Like, go rot. Like, that's.
Yeah.
Also, any journalism worth anything, any journalist worth anything would have seen that that was the bigger story and ignored whatever and blown it right open.
Yeah. Any journalist with a brain would have said, no, I don't need to talk to a psycho crazy man who's murdering women. No, I have a story about police incompetence and how they let this psycho woman killing murdering man out into the world.
And also this psycho crazy man has confessed to other murders that have yet to be prosecuted. Like, that is the story. And so it was like so egregious, it was almost a plot hole, because I was like, how could this man not go for that?
Shout out to MU First and Finest for taking McGinnistic journalism ethics. Thank you.
Well, to be fair, a lot of people took that side where they were just so focused on getting an interview with the defendant that they did not care about ethics and they did not care about getting any sort of closure for the victims.
It was like a snowball. The media couldn't stop, because once they brought it to light, everyone was like, wow, crazy story. And they're like, oh my gosh, we must get this guy on camera.
So Carl is not totally like out
not
of
a fictional mindset. Character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's but like, also, that was the day and age of the rise in broadcast news, and it was a boys club. It was cutthroat. It was way more in its like actual like heyday of like, there's a deadline you have to reach. It's not a 24-hour news cycle kind of thing.
Yeah. The role of deadline journalism plus no women in the room telling you, oh, that's fucked. Don't do that.
Also, he kissed her. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, a bunch of men telling you that this guy is really smart because they're cops and they did their job really badly. And so the only way that they can shift responsibility off of themselves is by making it seem like they were faced with some like crazy genius. Like, push back a little.
My favorite moment of the book is when she's like, yeah, I saw him picking his boogers at least 2 times in court. He's not that smart. I was like, preach.
Well, and the like, the woman lawyer who you end up hating, but you're like, oh my God, a woman who is smart is having to deal with this shit and make him look smart because he's like, I'm defending myself. Like, and he has law school on his resume. You don't, not everybody who goes to law school ends up graduating or is a good lawyer. You know, like, it was just so interesting how every little piece came together to make him sensationalized.
Right. I also think it is like, this is like a point that's really tangential to the book, but the like assuming that just because a person has a certain credentials or says they have a certain credential makes them smart is really classist. And I'm like, not every person who ends up in some random law school is a genius. The fact that someone has managed to get into school does not mean they're smart. The fact that someone has not been to a certain school does not mean that they're an idiot. So like, stop buying in so much to just this narrative that like, oh, he took a law school class, so he's a genius. Like, yeah. I know law students who are fucking dumb. Like, stop.
Well, and also
I took a comm law class. I don't know shit.
Yeah, we all did. And also the fact that he failed out of 2 law schools in this book. So like, he ain't that smart.
Mm-mm.
And so it's just, yeah, it's infuriating, but you can totally, like I was like, yeah, I could totally see that happening. Just the discrediting. The author
did a great job walking you through why it was infuriating and making you feel that way.
Yeah, like the discrediting of the women and then the overhype of the man. You're like, fuck you.
Yes. Okay. Something I want to talk about is that I think this author wrote the sequence of events really well, but until the end. The end was rushed. I agree. I don't know that this author, however, wrote relationships really well. I personally felt reading this book, I wanted to feel Pamela and Denise's friendship, and I don't think I really felt it. I like was told about the love, but I didn't really feel it. And I felt the same with Ruth's relationship with Tina, whereas like I felt like I was told that there was like love and affection, but I didn't really like, feel the sense of like who they are and like what their relationships were. And that to me was like the biggest detractor from the book, is I really wanted that. How do you guys feel about that?
I agree. There's one instance, though, when Pamela found out Denise had saved her Columbia admittance letter. That's where I got it far more of the relationship from those two than from Tina and Ruth.
Yeah.
Tina and Ruth felt like a relationship of convenience. And yet they were supposedly like marital partners by the time this happened or something, like legally. I was like, I really still just feel like Ruth was running away from her mommy at this point.
Yeah. What made me uncomfortable with their relationship, although I really appreciated that like Ruth was coming out to a very Catholic family after them putting essentially her into an asylum / conversion therapy because she was a lesbian. It felt like Tina was her shrink, and that feels extremely unethical for her to be dating her shrink. Slightly.
I agree with
that. I mean, she wasn't her shrink.
But like,
she wasn't. I see what Catherine's saying, though. Like,
yeah.
In the arguments depicted in the book, sometimes I felt like she would take a really like high and mighty stance of like, I'm a psychological professional and like, this is how your relationships are working. And I felt like at times she would actually kind of gaslight Ruth. I felt like I actually had problems with like the depiction of the relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of that therapy stuff was worked in just to introduce the concept of impossible grief, and that was entirely the purpose of that. But, and here's where you guys may not agree. I was holding this back in the non-spoiler section. I don't think this LGBTQ relationship was necessary in this book. I think it was just trying to make a point that have representation, make a point. You know, it's a very modern take on the story. I thought it was complex and interesting. I just, like, don't think any of the victims' families who are seeing this want to look back and be like, oh, like, are you insinuating that my daughter, who this character was basically loosely based on, was like a lesbian and hiding? You know, like, I just think there were so many complexities that took away from the actual point of the story. Like, she was still seduced by a normal looking man to help him, not in a sexual way, but like, I'm just not sure it was needed.
So I personally did not have an issue with like the lesbian relationship stuff. I felt fine about it. The point that I didn't like in the book is I really did not feel the need to have Ruth's perspective. No. I felt like you could have
Tina.
Yes, or Tina. I'm like, you could have totally cut them out of the story. And that was one of my problems with it, is I was like, I don't really think these characters are necessary. I don't think.
Right. I think they were just in there for the LGBTQ storyline.
Yeah, I can see your point. I didn't think of it that way because I thought of it like as a fictionalized person who, I think it's a good story to tell about how a family doesn't look for their daughter and doesn't look for her body, because like you find out that she's just missing for 70 years or whatever, how many years, like 40, 50 years, because her family doesn't want to accept that she was part of the LGBTQ community and that maybe she was indeed murdered because her girlfriend said that she might have been murdered. I think that's an important point to bring across, especially for the time period. I didn't think about it like as if it was an actual victim's family, more of like a good way of telling that perspective of people that are invisible to the criminal justice and just the society in general.
Yes, I just don't think you needed half the book of that character to make that point.
I don't know. Maybe I related with Ruth a lot because of her insecurity with her body, her family. And I just kind of, I liked reading her storyline. Maybe I'm the outlier in this. I get what you guys are saying. It wasn't totally necessary. We probably could have done without her time jumps and her perspective and just done Pamela with Tina meeting her and then hearing from Tina.
I think what really soured me the most on that storyline was the end. I didn't need to see her being tortured and murdered after all of the work to, I don't know. I just didn't like how her story wrapped up. I thought it was hurried and didn't get what it deserved after all the effort that was put into it. So why include it at all?
So I kind of agree with that. Part of the reason I ultimately felt like she either shouldn't have been included or should have been included in a different way is that I felt like her storyline kind of dropped trauma at your feet at like the very end of the book. And it was really crushing. I mean, like what happened to her was really horrible. And I do, like, again, also Catherine, echo your point. It's hard for me to separate the fact that this really did happen to someone. And so it's like, I just didn't think it was great story structure to have like the worst parts of someone's story be just kind of deposited at the end. Because like, I mean, there's trauma like throughout the whole story, because it's a story about a serial killer who was a rapist and a murderer and who did like despicable, dehumanizing things to women. But it's also like, I don't want to end a book on the note of like the disgusting, horrible rape and murder of two women. I want it to be more like, and this is how society reacted. This is how like the people who survived them reacted. And so it felt like a very heavy weight to just sit at the very end.
Right. You empowered them. They got justice. They made this, you know, they found the answer to Ruth. But the whole time you're watching the justice happen, you're watching her get raped and murdered. And it's like, whoa, whoa. We worked so hard to get past this. And yeah. Now here we are reliving this.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that. And the ending was harder for me to read for sure. I see it as better than what could have been written, which would could have been the like quote unquote transcript from the defendant of his confession of like, oh, I did this, this, and this. Instead, it's from her perspective. But if you are maybe the argument is if should you do it at all? And just say we
and found a random piece of transcript was just stuck in there.
Yeah, I was like, why is this
here? Yeah, that part was, yeah, I totally agree. That part could have been done like, without. I think it was supposed to show
but pick one.
I think it was supposed to show he was a rambling idiot, essentially, is what it was supposed to show.
Which it did, yeah, but
100%. And then like it was said that beforehand for 43 minutes he talked about his innocence, and it's like, wow, that's a long time to talk about your innocence. You might be hiding something there. But if you're going to tell that ending and that conclusion for that character, I prefer to hear it from her than from his perspective, but I don't know if it was necessary at all. So I agree with y'all on that.
I definitely don't want it from his perspective. Yeah. That's like the only worst thing the author could have done.
But I think when she left with him, it was implied. You knew what happened.
Yeah. I think the author in this book was maybe still finding the balance between what is explicitly said and what we already know. And I think for 90% of the book, that was a line she walked really well. I think with Ruth's storyline concluding in that way, it was maybe a little too far into like the trauma line for me.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that.
Okay, well, something that we have discussed and is like another like important part of the book is that character and time changes are included in this book. I think I've already kind of mentioned I did not personally love this. I found it honestly really confusing, and it like disrupted the story a lot for me, which is also part of why I wish it was kind of focused more on Pamela than other characters. But what did you guys think?
I agree. There was parts where I couldn't keep track of where we were, because not only is she talking in the past, she talks about the future as if she's telling the story from the perspective of herself as in the future in the past. So there's mm-hmm. moments where she's just like, and in the future, I'll realize that X, Y, and Z. So there are those moments. So that was a little confusing. What I did like, though, is at the beginning of the chapters, it said like day XXX. So it was like day one, day 564 for when the trial started, and then day like 15,000, as if like this is a continuing thing happening in her life where she has to continue to move forward from this trauma, which I think is a really great way of telling the story. I didn't mind. I wouldn't have minded it as much if we didn't have these random time changes, even within the time changes themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
I literally would not have known. I also like the like ongoing thing with the net day count. Without the years included, I literally would have had no idea what was happening. And please stop bringing COVID into every modern book. Leave me alone.
Yes. Oh my God. I hated
that part. I agree.
Hated it.
Leave me alone. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, I don't want to see movies about COVID. I don't want to see books about COVID.
And it was so random. It was just like three paragraphs where she talks about her life during COVID. And I was like, fuck it. Exit. I don't want
it. And I think it was like, there was one section that was in like 2019. I was like, stop.
Yeah.
But pick a time period that character is in. Or do it all from one character's point of view in multiple time periods. Like, I understand why she did it. I maybe am too dumb to follow. I don't know. It confused me at some points.
Well, we're both too dumb. And now that we've read so many books that have character and time jump perspectives, I think my argument going forward is going to be you can jump perspectives or you can jump time periods.
But not
you
both. You
can't jump both. And so I think that is ultimately my argument for this book is like, I think the time period jumps could have been good without the character jumps. And I think the character jumps could have been good without the time period jumps. But both was just like a little too much.
My brain hurt.
Yes.
That's why it slowed down, I think.
I agree.
There's a lot to dissect in this book and a lot of themes that are put into this book and a lot of truths and a lot of issues. So it didn't necessarily need that added on to it.
Yes. Also, I see that like some of our last questions are kind of about the sexism portrayed in the book and the way that just everyday women were kind of had to interact with men, especially if they wanted to get something done. I don't know if either of you two have ever seen the film Mother with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
First disclaimer, it is a super fucking weird movie, which is a retelling of like Mary and biblical stories. But what I took away from that movie is like the feeling of helplessness and being trodden on and being not listened to and having all of these horrible things happen and people are just talking over you and trampling on you. If you haven't read, oh my God, if you haven't seen the movie, that doesn't make sense. But if you've seen it, you'll know what I'm talking about. That's what this book felt to me like at times because of how women were just not listened to and how they had to navigate the gender dynamics of like not being intimidating, but still asserting their will. And it was so infuriating, but also well written.
Yeah, no, it is a true ass story because like the fucking jigsaw puzzles and juggling you have to perform to like, I can't have a resting bitch face, but I have to basically be assertive and I have to smile and say please and thank you and ma'am and sir. Like it is fucking exhausting sometimes.
And I would like to get on my retired sorority girl box real quick. First of all, thank God I read this after I lived in a sorority house because I pictured the whole beginning happening in my own sorority house. It was traumatic. And like we definitely had one time my friend woke up and there was a random dude on their couch who had just wandered in drunk and slept in their room. Don't tell our house mom. You know what? It doesn't matter. My sorority doesn't exist. Like shit's not that hard to do. And so that was, first of all, terrifying. Second of all, though, I appreciated Pamela. I was Pamela. I was keeping track of people's points and participation, and I was there for scholarship and being involved. And then there were girls, you know, who were going out and stuff, but I was the stick in the mud one there to put it on my resume and make amazing friends and have connections. Like, I was Pamela. I related hard to Pamela. And I appreciated this quote at the beginning that you guys chose to read, where it's talking about we were the best and the brightest. We were on college campuses in sororities. I feel like sororities are often painted like bimbos. So I appreciated that this recognized the sort of other side of that life of girls who are in it to have, you know, the support system and the alumni connections and to just like let their type A thrive. And so there's my little soapbox about thank you for the sorority representation that I've always wanted, though it ruined. I could probably never sleep in a sorority house again.
Yeah.
If you go to Florida State and you're a Chi Omega, please don't read this book.
Actually, the whole time I was reading it, I was like, Caitlin is having a totally different experience reading this book. Uh-huh. Because I was not in a sorority, Catherine was not in a sorority. And so the whole time I was thinking about you, I was like, I bet Caitlin just understands this in a different way.
So I was living in a sorority house the year that there were the bomb and shooting threats on the Mizzou campus due to the race riots. So, you know, totally different, but also like was not the most pleasant I was like out at a concert when it happened and they were like locking down Greektown, and I was terrified to pull my car into our garage under our house afterwards and wasn't sure if I'd even be able to get into our house. Like, it's a different experience. And I feel like I drew slightly on that also, but like, and I'm still really good friends with many of the girls in my house. While I say that was the most interesting part of the book, because it was also like, to me, the most like, oh shit, no thank you.
It's too close to home.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kyle for removing the weird boy from the house that one time, though. They know
Kyle. Kyle is a female friend of Caitlin's who is very cool.
She was the head of the like house.
She's an OG.
The man was harmless. He was drunk and lost.
But the fact he got into the house and just started sleeping in there.
One of the doors closed the wrong way. And not only was he in the house, he was on the third floor.
Oh my God. That's
a lot.
Yeah. So like shit happens. And it's like, oh my God, this could have been us, you know?
God.
Anyway, there's that traumatic ending too. That.
At least it wasn't the defendant.
That's like the whole point she even mentions at the end of the book. Like, you know, this could have had, he could have walked into any sorority house in this country and it just happened to be mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say something she also mentions at the end of the book is there's Rogers everywhere. And Roger is the main theme of this book, where he was the original person who was accused of, not even accused. She didn't even accuse him. She said, yeah, he looked a lot like Roger, but I realized it wasn't Roger. And he was basically a drunk predator. A
neighborhood morally gray liar. Predator.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah.
So it kind of, the book delved into discussions of intimate partner violence and domestic violence, as well as sexism. So what did y'all think of the Roger of it all?
My favorite point related to Roger was, and I don't remember exactly where it is in the book, but it's in one of the points where like the lawyers are trying to sort of point the finger at Roger, and Pamela is saying like, no, like no one is believing me, but it wasn't Roger. And the point that I loved that the author made was that Rogers are everywhere, and the fact that a Roger exists and people want to point the finger at them distracts from the fact that there are really a lot more predators in the world that we would like to acknowledge.
The predators are just smarter than Roger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't mean they're smart. They're just smarter than Roger.
Exactly. And like, there are a lot of women in the world who have been really like deeply and horribly violated by people who are walking around on the street still to this day. And we would love to like not believe that and like turn our eyes away from that because it's really uncomfortable. But like, I think Roger was sort of an exemplification of like the everyday villain, as opposed to like a serial killer, where he was a guy who was just really shitty and like felt comfortable taking advantage of women. And that's sadly like really common.
And how women are ashamed to tell their friends when bad things happen. And so he had whatever he does to like three different girls who were friends, but they didn't want to talk about because they were ashamed.
And you see that is a fair thing to feel, not in the sense that like that's fair in the sense of like, oh yeah, like you should feel ashamed. No, it's because like in court, because he forced himself on Pamela, it discredits her testimony almost, because it's like, oh my God, you were just defending Roger because he kissed you.
Oh, they
once.
Were broken up because you guys kiss. Like when that, ooh, I was so angry when that lady brought that up. I was like, mm-hmm. Ooh, mad respect because you're good at your job. But also, I hate you.
Because that's not fair.
And even the language of like Pamela in that chapter is really good about pointing like the, just changing the language by one word changes what you mean so much. And the prosecutor kept trying to say, you kissed. And she was like, no, Roger kissed me. And that is like very important. And
well, I thought
that
was how a jury's instruction is to convict if they can say the person committed this crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. Well, that puts a little bit of doubt in your head.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like so unfair to women because that reasonable doubt is everywhere, which is the point of the book. Like someone who can be reasonable doubt is everywhere for women. It just is that common, sadly.
Right. Which is why a majority of sexual assault survivors don't take their cases to the criminal justice system.
She went to that party. She wore that outfit. She was intoxicated.
She put herself in that position.
Right. They
kissed. Same thing. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just awful. So maybe PSA to read Know My Name by Chanel Miller.
Is that our book recommendation?
That was going to be my book recommendation.
It was going to be mine too.
Oh my God, guys, stop. It was going to be mine.
I think had I read this book before Know My Name, I would have not had as many issues with the victimizing. I don't know. They're different experiences, and I felt like maybe I was looking for the Know My Name experience when that is not the experience this book is trying to give you. It probably tainted my reading. Also, are we at the end of our questions?
I think we are, so we can get into book recommendations.
Well, I wanted to point out real quick that based on the actual Ted Bundy story, I believe it was Karen Campbell? I have to find her name again here. Yes. Okay, so the Colorado victim it kept referencing from the hotel, Karen Campbell was a real person abducted from a hotel in Colorado by Ted Bundy. Kimberly Leach, the 12-year-old, the last victim, that was real. That was a real victim. So, like, you know, the Florida State Chi Omega, that was really where they were attacked. So, like, the two girls who died had names, and they were not the names used in the book. So, like, just so you know, that is where I dug up my information. So, Lisa Levy, it seems like Denise is Lisa Levy, but it's not. But, like, because there are real victims being named in the book, my mind was like, oh, who is this based on? But it's not. So anyway, I would encourage people to read about the actual victims and what lives they were living and understand the parallels in the book and where it differs.
Yeah, I think there needs to be almost a disclaimer on this book that this is a work of fiction. It is based on a true story. But it is not the truth.
I was shook when I got to the end and it was not in there.
Yeah. So maybe that's something PSA to the author, based on a true story, not the true story. But it's to bring about the discussion of the topic she puts in the book.
Right. So not entirely fictionalized. Some of these victims are real. And it is truly terrible what happened to them because that part is absolutely real.
Okay.
Okay, book recommendations.
Yeah. So book recommendations. I can kick us off. I want to recommend Medusa's Sisters. It is a little bit out of left field. It's a mythology retelling, but, and it's probably soon to come on this podcast, but it is like a really great relationships story. It's about three sisters. It's the story of Medusa, and it is also a story about sexual assault because that's what happened to Medusa. And so I actually found myself, the two books I found myself thinking about a lot while I was reading this was Know My Name, and it was also Medusa's Sisters. So even though the book is really different, I just think, like, as far as sexual assault and rape and portrayals of women and discussing sexism, it really like hit kind of the same chord for me.
I think that's a good one. I'm going to throw in a completely fictional but modern day book. I think I've recommended it before. Shout out to Fiona Murray for understanding my soul and recommending to me the Book of Cold Cases. This one, the character is also going through her own trauma while solving a like crime. And it's set in like the same kind of Washington setting. So I kept thinking of it while I was reading. Totally fictional, not based in reality, but I really liked it. If you're a true crime person looking for that true crime feel without all the heaviness of it being true.
Well, obviously, I recommend Know My Name because that's like the creme de la creme on telling the true story of an event and telling the victim story. And Chanel Miller is an amazing writer and she deserves a Pulitzer, a Nobel Peace Prize, you know, all the awards.
An Emmy, an Oscar, a Tony.
So many awards.
I don't know.
She deserves the praise that she needs. But I'm also going to recommend, it's not out of left field, but it's a nonfiction book. And it's called Lady Justice, Women, the Law, and the Battle to Save America. And it's about female litigators and lawyers during the 2015 to 2021 years. But it also talks about how much females and women litigators have been impacting the law since before they were even allowed to be lawyers. And I think it both can depress you and also give you hope for the future of the law when you see these very powerful women like battling sexism, racism, xenophobia in modern day America. And I hope that it can be a little bit more of a pick me up after this book.
Okay. Well, some heavy reading ahead on your lists. but so these are just our opinions. We want you to discuss this with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. This is a brand spanking new book. Might be like the closest we've ever done a book to its publication. Highly anticipated book. So like we would love to hear your thoughts because there aren't a lot of thoughts out there yet. So come discuss with us at Busy Girls Pod. Pretty much everywhere you can find us. We have one more week of spooky season coming up. So we're happy you've been joining us for October.
Yeah, rate and review. 5 stars. Okay. Well, with that, I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.